or write to the Interior Department at Firewise, Washington, D.C., 20240. Take a moment. Save your life and your memories.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, I guess. It's 6 o'clock on a Tuesday evening, and you are listening to, you should be listening to, WUSB Stony Brook. Hope that got your attention. It's time once again for another exciting edition of Off the Wall. And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Yep, I'm here.
Wow. So we both made it. We both survived the hurricane.
Yeah, we were secured tightly, and we were sure not to become debris.
The other thing they don't tell you when the media is giving you all the advice on how to stay safe during a hurricane is that if you're 1,000 miles away, you don't have to do anything, really. You can go outside. I mean, we didn't go outside. We weren't, you know, that daring. But you could go outside if you were in New York. And I understand people did.
We were like the very edge of the storm.
Well, of the edge of...
The edge, yeah.
Right. Yeah. But we weren't on the edge of the media coverage, that's for sure. It was everywhere. Couldn't get away from that.
Yeah, they wanted us on the edge of our seats. And boy, were they ever covering that thing. It was probably the storm of
the century?
The storm of coverage. I want to say the coverage of the century of the storm of the century.
Well, no, it was the storm of the century. I mean,
but they covered it like they
say it.
Covered
the
no
the
other storm.
Say it's the storm of the century.
It's the storm of the century.
All right, then. All right. It doesn't hurt. We say it every week. And now it's done. Now it's finished until the next one comes. Jose, where's Jose? Is Jose on its way here?
I don't know exactly. I think the trajectory goes out up just under Bermuda, but not all the way up to Bermuda.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I go through all the channels to see who's covering it, who isn't. Of course, the Weather Channel is covering it. And it's great to see the business channels covering it. CNBC and Bloomberg covering hurricanes. You're not supposed to be doing that. You're supposed to be talking about, you know, how to make money and things like that. Home Shopping Network, they kept doing home shopping. And
They kind of wade into it, some of those channels. They try to, like, tie in their interests, whether it be, you know, commodities trading or... I don't know, garden decorating techniques for a disaster scenario.
How will this affect your investments?
Is your golf swing affected?
Exactly. Well, that's the sports channels. They do that.
The golf
Speaking
channel.
Of sports, do you know that you can catch the Yankees playing the Tampa Bay Rays, is it?
Devil Rays?
They used to be called the Devil Rays, but I think they had to take the devil out because of Marco Rubio insisted or something. I don't know. But they're the Rays now. And they're playing at Shea Stadium at Citi Field against the Yankees. Now you might ask yourself, how is that possible? Because neither one of those teams is the Mets, and that's their stadium. But apparently, they didn't want to play in Tampa, which probably is smart because they were inundated. So they had to play the Yankees. And I guess they couldn't play Yankee Stadium because that's the Yankee Stadium, and then they couldn't pretend that it was a home game for them. So they said, you know what, we're going to go a little bit south to Queens, and we'll just say that's Tampa for now, and the Yankees can come take a bus over there, and it'll be a home game. But, you know, the thing that's weird is that there's obviously more Yankee fans there than there are Tampa fans, or Met fans for that matter. And it's also a way, I'm seeing this on television, it's a way to see the Yankees for cheaper in New York. People are actually saying that if you go to the Met Stadium to see the Yankees play Tampa,
it's an away game.
It's an away game for them, but you can see the Yankees for much cheaper than they charge at Yankee Stadium.
That's a cool trick.
That's everything that's wrong with the Yankees, as far as I'm concerned. Actually, there's more that's wrong with them, but that's enough for now.
I don't know enough to comment, but I'm with you, and so I support the sentiment.
Yeah. If Trump had a team, it would be the Yankees. If Bernie Sanders had a team, it would be the Mets. That's all you need to know. That sums it up.
Okay, so it's like the Cubs, and Bernie would be for like the
No, that's
the
not
White
at all
Sox.
Like the Cubs. Oh my God, it's so different. No.
Okay.
Imagine single payer health care. That's the Mets. Okay.
Yeah.
Imagine having to pay through the nose for everything and not getting anything in return. That's the Yankees. Except they get things in return. They convince you that you're getting something for it. But in actuality, all you're getting are higher prices while they walk off with a championship year after year.
Yeah, it doesn't really work with the
that they pay for with your money. Okay, you know, I'm gonna sit back down and get off this kick because that's not where I want to go tonight.
It's outrageous.
So hurricane coverage, it was prevalent, it was everywhere,
wall to wall, and we stopped talking about all the important things.
Right, all the other crises. What happened to those? All of a sudden,
the H bomb, the F bomb.
Let's focus on the H bomb right now. North Korea wasn't an issue for the past week because we were worried about Irma. And I was asking people what's happening with North Korea. Nobody knew because it wasn't being covered, almost as if it wasn't really a crisis.
Like a made up? You mean like so it wasn't, so it had to been made up and we were all just going right into the play, right into the hands of the playbook of the puppeteers of the master world order. Yeah.
When you say it like that, it's so eloquent. Yes, it's that's pretty much what it is. We are the not the puppeteers. We're the puppets. That's what we are. We're being manipulated.
The shiny object. Yeah,
somebody's pulling the string. Somebody's got their hand up. Well, yeah, basically
thermonuclear Armageddon, and we draw our attention to it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But now it's back. Okay, the hurricane's gone. So all of a sudden today, everyone's talking about North Korea again. And wasn't it nice of them to wait? Wasn't it nice of them not to obliterate us while the hurricane was happening? I guess they'd figure, you know, well, let's see what the hurricane does. Maybe it'll do our job for us, and we can obliterate somebody else. Maybe that's what they were thinking.
Well, that, and of course, the solemn memory of yesterday, the celebration or remembrance of the Twin Towers coming down here in the New York area.
Well, that was yesterday. The hurricane's been taking place over the last week, so it's... I don't know.
The combination led to quite a weekend, and it's just it's good they laid off a little bit. You know, no more tests for now.
Well, here's the thing. Okay, so North Korea has this potential, supposedly, to launch an H bomb on an interballistic missile or intercontinental ICBM, and we're all going nuts over that. Oh my God, they could possibly send a missile over the ocean, and. First of all, I don't know how we would ever make it uncontested all the way over there. I think we're aware of it before they're aware of it when they launch things. You know, we say they're going to launch something in 2 days, and usually they do because we've got all the spy satellites and all kinds of monitoring going on. We can tell when something like this is going to happen. Okay, there's that. We are bent out of shape over the fact that they have this particular weapon, and they just continue to flout what we say. We tell them to stop, and they don't. I mean, what kind of a threat is that? That's unbelievable. Someone not obeying us. Imagine that. And then, if you look at the numbers, I just looked this up right now, so I have the most updated information. How many nukes does the United States have? We have 6,800 warheads. That's according to data from Hans Christensen and Robert Norris at the Federation of American Scientists. Now, 2,800 of those are retired. I don't know what you do with a retired warhead exactly. 4,000 are stockpiled, and 1,800 are deployed. So even if you just went with the deployed number, that's still 1,800 nuclear missiles that could be sent in their direction. Now, you're a small country. North Korea is a tiny country. We're a massive country. Try to put yourself in their position as far as that particular scenario goes. And just imagine how you would react to somebody telling you, yeah, you can't do that. You can't have any sort of nuclear weapon of your own. But we can have 1,800 of them. We can have 10,000 of them if we feel like it. Russia has 7,000. You know, other countries have these things, but you can't. Now, imagine that in their eyes, with their perspective, and you might start to understand where they're coming from. I'm not saying you're going to agree with what they stand for or who they are or anything like that, but isn't that sort of how you resolve conflicts, by trying to imagine what the other side is thinking?
Yeah, and that seems to be something we're incapable of doing, and realizing our own privileged position in a head start with this technology. And it is something purely only out of the historical emergence of it that we're the ones dictating this. And I guess, you know, whatever our stupid rationale is, it's that we need, you know, so many. If something does erupt with one or a dozen weapons that North Korea has, to respond to them would leave us depleted for whatever other, however many other countries that might also step up to us in that situation. I mean, how many, you take however many nukes we have and then like however many teams are in FIFA, uh-huh. and you divide that and you figure out how many different teams, how many nukes per team. And then you know, you know how many.
Hold on. Why are we giving nuclear weapons?
Never mind.
Why are we giving nuclear weapons to football teams? Where are you going with this?
I realize the error in my analogy.
You do. You realize it.
No, you're right.
Because they have enough to worry about. I watched some of the qualifications for the World Cup, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. You don't want to burden them with nuclear weapons on top of that.
There's more countries and teams too, but the point is.
Aren't there more members of FIFA than members of the United Nations? There are more countries that agree to play football together under one particular organization than there are countries that agree to work together for peace and harmony under one organization.
Yeah, so does that also surpass the existence of total countries?
Well, like I don't see
ones
how
that won't cooperate, even though they don't cooperate, they still exist.
Well, you still exist even if you don't cooperate.
Are there more teams than countries? I'm curious. So anyway,
my idea that I just had now, why don't we just flip them? Why don't we just make FIFA into the diplomatic organizational group of people? They decide how things are going to work. And, you know, and they're pretty diplomatic in many ways. You see them helping each other out when they trip them and you know, sportsmanship and all that. And then the actual diplomats, they have to play football. And that way, the favorites, you know, Germany and Brazil, they won't always be the favorites because, well, maybe their diplomats are old and decrepit and they can't play as well as somebody from Senegal or dare I say, Andorra, you know, countries that might not have had much of a presence before.
Or Cote d'Ivory.
They could have one superstar. Yeah, all kinds of countries. I don't know. It's as crazy an idea as any that's out there. But here's the other thing. You know, we basically, it's all about equality. And this is kind of what our theme is. It's all about treating people the same way. We claim to, you know, believe in that, but we don't. We don't believe in that. We're taught not to believe in that. And I'll give you some examples right now. There's a statement coming out from South Korea. South Korea's defense minister is publicly boasting it'll create a new decapitation unit called the Spartan 3000. No, it's not a computer. It's a decapitation unit, and they have the express intent of taking out North Korean leadership. That's according to the New York Times. The brigade-sized unit of 2,000 to 4,000 soldiers will be established by year's end. That's, again, according to the New York Times. They say Defense Minister Sung Young-moon claimed this, adding the military was already retooling helicopters and transport planes to be able to penetrate North Korean airspace at night. Now, it's out of the ordinary for a senior government leader to say publicly they're working on a plan to assassinate a foreign head of state. But there's an interesting reason behind it. The South is trying to freak out its northern neighbor and get them to the negotiating table instead of further developing nuclear weapons. Well, you know, this sounds very similar to what North Korea is doing. They're trying to freak out their opponents to get them to come to the negotiating table. How is this any different? You know, claiming there's a decapitation unit. Imagine if North Korea said that they have a decapitation unit against Donald Trump. You know, equality, folks. What's if they said that? You know, according to what was it? Our defense minister or war minister? What are the titles called these days? I don't know, but it's hard to keep up. Somebody in the Trump administration over the past week said that any more threats will be met with severe action or something along those lines.
Yeah, and we're sanctioning them. We're sanctioning their ability to like export fabric and crazy little petty stuff. So we're going to put them even closer to the brink of destitute, being destitute or whatever uh-huh. these sanctions impact has.
The sanctions don't have an impact.
Purportedly.
That's pretty, it's pretty obvious the sanctions don't work. More sanctions, you know, aren't going to sway them in any way. We know this.
But in extending out your theory, are you saying that they should be allowed to have 6,000 nuclear warheads?
Well, here I don't think they can have 6,000 nuclear warheads because...
They built an entire infrastructure for it.
Yeah, but, you know, at a tremendous cost, just to get a handful, for them to do, they'd have to do some really good math to get up to that number.
To scale it up?
Yeah, I don't see how it's physically or economically possible to do that. They're at this stage now. And, you know, actually, and this might sound crazy, but the one thing that has not been tried over all the decades of dealing with North Korea is reaching out to them and being friendly. Now, yeah, I know it's a despotic regime. I know everybody's starving. I know it's basically like a cult leadership and all that kind of thing. But everything we're doing up until this point is not working. All right, so why not actually try and befriend them so that way you might be able to sway them in a different direction instead of threatening them and condemning them when they achieve something like this. Congratulate them. Say, hey, good job. Wow, how did you do that? That's pretty awesome. We didn't think you could, but you did. It's I know that sounds crazy, but would we be in a worse situation today for doing that than continuing down the same old tired road? I don't think we would be. I think they might be a little surprised, but having been there myself, I do know that when you make friends with somebody in North Korea, they will lay down their life for you. They are very, very devoted and loyal people. It's just something that they take great pride in. And obviously, having to back down is not something that they're used to doing. So we need to understand that we can't keep challenging it because we're not going to get anywhere. You know, you can say, yeah, we're not going to stand for this sort of thing, but it happens anyway. What are you going to do about it? You can't just keep making the same threats. You have to turn this corner at some point. I mentioned last week there's a reason why the Korean War never ended. The South Koreans, North Koreans, neither one can admit defeat. Neither one can surrender. They never will. And that's why some other tact has to be explored.
Yeah, I think as far as what you said there, like the lauding of their ability could be something we are more clever in executing as far as encouraging the peaceful use of the technological milestones that they're allegedly achieving at each stage. In other words, you know, encouraging them to be a participant in peaceful uses, whether that be for like communication or weather research or even human spaceflight programs. And you see that already with like the cooperation between the United States and Russia to a greater level,
yes.
In a great deal, mostly out of necessity, to a great deal out of necessity because of the shuttle program retiring and us not having systems to support cargo and missions to and from the space station. But there's certainly like ways that we could be more inclusive and have North Korea skip so-called eras of industrialization like we've talked about in the past. Mm-hmm. There's no need maybe for them to be in like intermediate industrial economies. Maybe they have made these technological advances and could participate some of that know-how and stuff to the market itself. But by sanctioning them, we're by definition eliminating those opportunities out the gate. Like you can't even begin to talk about that because we're sanctioning over anything else as a strategy. And we're smart enough where we have diplomats and I think what we're saying is that there isn't enough creativity being put into this process.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a process. It could be led in a lot more diplomatic ways.
You have to think outside the box. And right now we're stuck in the box doing things the way we've been doing them that have not worked. Now, before I get accused of you know, siding with the enemy and propping up a dictator and all that kind of thing. Let's just look at the perspective here. Let's look at our history. Let's look at all the dictators that we have propped up and supported and turned a blind eye to all the human rights abuses. You know, we can go back in history and we can talk for the next few days on all the examples there are. Let's look at the Philippines today, though. Let's look at Duterte, you know, this horrible, horrible person who literally says to great fanfare, to great support of his people, that he will murder people who use drugs, people who are suspected of using drugs, people who are suspected of selling drugs. And he makes no apology about this. He puts journalists in jail. He threatens the lives of journalists. And yet he is somebody that Donald Trump looks up to, congratulates, does not condemn. All right. This guy is the personification of a modern day Hitler in so many ways. But we're not worried about him. We're not concerned about this guy. We're not even criticizing him. I mean, you know, we are as people, but we won't find our government doing that. And in fact, you can look at them taking notes as far as how they deal with the media and who the actual enemies of the state are. It's very, very unhealthy. And, you know, like North Korea, the people support this leader, except in their case, it seems to be more genuine. It seems to be something that they really do want to kill all these alleged drug users. In North Korea, you get the sense that they don't really have a choice. They better follow or else. So, yeah, there are differences, but there's so much hypocrisy on our side. We cannot point to the human rights issue and say that is why we can never be friends with these people. Yeah, you can. You have in the past. And you certainly can to get out of this particular situation and make it a whole lot better.
Isn't there some interest in not confronting Duterte because of the South China Sea and the disputed shipping in that area? Does that, I mean, does that even make any sense at all? Or am I just crazy? That
you know as well as I do.
We might look past certain behavior because it's we need Philippines as an ally to put leverage
politics.
On China.
And human rights be damned. Nobody really cares about that in our government. They care about strategic alliances.
That's where the creativity goes instead of actually solving on a bilateral, you know, nation to nation respectively. Mm-hmm. It becomes the something that was thought up in a grander world, like I said, world order that someone is architecting.
Well, meanwhile, Senator John McCain on Sunday called for the United States to step up its presence around North Korea, make clear to its leader that aggressive acts would lead to the annihilation of his country. Washington needs to make sure that Kim Jong-un knows that if he acts in an aggressive fashion, the price will be extinction. Now, what kind of craziness is that? What kind of ridiculous way is that for an elected leader to be speaking on the world stage? Yet we accept this as completely normal when it comes from us. Again, equality, if it comes from somebody else, oh my God, how dare you? You must be a real threat. And it parallels really well to the conversations we've been having over the past couple of weeks about equality between people and law enforcement, the rich and the poor, the haves, the have-nots. You know, people need to not only be treated equally, but to act equally as well. And that's why, you know, we got criticized even for suggesting that it would be a positive development in a film if a precinct full of cops got blown up. You know, you can't say that, even though they're fictional, you can't say it. Because they're cops and they're second to God himself. No, they're equal. They're human beings just like us. We treat them as they treat us. You know, I've been seeing documentaries from Venezuela about what's going on there. And, you know, here we are again with more hypocrisy, this time from the left, because many of us are just turning a blind eye to what's going on in Venezuela because it's a socialist regime. Yeah, it's a despotic socialist regime. The people are revolting against it, and they have every right to. And we should be supporting those people and looking on what they're going through with sympathy, not trying to find ways that they're somehow being funded by evil people like the United States government or fascists or things like that. Now, you know, maybe there are some who are, but in this particular case, it's pretty obvious that the government is out of control and needs to be brought down. And when you see cops attacking people and people attacking the cops right back in the streets of Caracas, we cheer. We cheer because it's a little bit of justice. And the point that we've been trying to make over the past couple of weeks is that the way things are going in this country, when you have armored tanks and cops shooting people in the groin for their own amusement, you are going to create the situation where we fight back and we do the same thing to cops that cops do to us, same thing to soldiers that soldiers do to us. And that will be a very unhealthy environment, one we're not used to. But we move ever closer to that every single week. And it's something that we need to be paying attention to, or it's going to catch us by surprise. So there's a whole parallel here between what's happening domestically, what happens locally, what happens on the world stage. You know, you see so many examples of it that you sort of get immune to it. We all know that Israeli lives are worth more than Arab lives. We all know that. You know, we're taught this. It's emphasized in the media. If you kill one Israeli, 500 Arabs need to die to equal that? We know black lives are not worth the same as white lives. We know that females are not worth the same as males. No? It's not true? Well, if it's not true, why do we keep getting this reinforced? Why do we keep seeing it all the time? Why is it when somebody criticizes Israel, they get lambasted in the media, they get drawn up as anti-Semitic, even if they're Jewish themselves? And, you know, you throw a firebomb at a mosque and, well, you know, he was a misunderstood kid. He's frustrated with the way things are going. Excuses are made. You know, if a black guy is killed by a bunch of cops, none of them are going to serve any time. None of them are going to be treated like a true criminal. They're going to have all the opportunities to get their story straight before they even have to have their names released. And then they're going to walk in the end. Now, you know, someone of a different ethnic persuasion might commit a crime someplace and gets basically sent up the river for a very long time. We look at their race. We say, yeah, you know what? That's it's too bad, but that's just the way these people are. It's too bad they don't want to dig themselves out of that. Cop does the exact same thing, and we sympathize. You know, it might not be so overt in your day-to-day lives, but look at the media. Look at the way things are presented to you. And ask yourself, is this fair? Is this equal? Is this something that gives me the same access to the story, to the facts of the story, irregardless of race? I can't believe I used irregardless in a serious sentence. But there are so many examples of this constantly. I mean, I just read about today, in fact, the Freddie Gray case. This is in case you have trouble keeping up. The Baltimore case where Freddie Gray's neck was broken in the back of a police transport wagon. He was unrestrained by a seatbelt and they drove like crazy and they basically broke his neck. Well, U.S. Department of Justice, run by, you know, the people in charge now, they will not be bringing federal charges against the six cops involved in the arrest and death of Freddie Gray. Not surprised. Can't say I'm surprised at all. In the case of Eric Gardner, NYPD is declining to prosecute, despite recommendations from a civilian complaint board. We see instances of this all the time, and we accept it. We just allow this to happen time and time again. And the moment anybody fights back in any way, the accusations fly. You look into their history, their mental state, their ethnicity, all kinds of things, and they get widely condemned and viewed as tantamount to a terrorist. It's not fair. It's not equal. It's something that we have to constantly address. And whether it's North Korea or the latest victim of police violence, I know that's not a very you know, a very equal parallel, but you see instances of the unfairness and the inequality constantly, the way these stories are reported. Senator McCain can threaten an entire nation with extinction. That's okay. All right. Kim Jong-un fires a missile up into the air and it comes back down. And all of a sudden, we have to start digging our bunkers and preparing for their annihilation. Criticize a cop. How dare you? How can you dare form those words? Meanwhile, you see all this racism online from people who are cops, from people who are elected officials, and it's excused. It's brushed aside. We have serious problems. We have to confront.
Yeah, there's so much in there. I don't know what I could possibly comment on.
Yeah, it's like rolling down a hill. I couldn't stop. But
yeah, I'm definitely there are some parts of that. I think when we talk about it, when you hear the defense or those affiliated with it talk about extinction and the like, I think that comes from how we're characterizing the response from an idea, and that idea is freedom and liberty and all of those things that we've equated our country and our defense to, which I mean, in a lot of ways we've channeled that identity and nurtured it as a philosophy. No one would dispute that. No one would argue that America doesn't strive for these ideals, but they're not necessarily the reality. And to equate your defense or your offensive power, all of that might with an ideal without recognizing the obvious shortcomings with your actual nation, where that firepower is coming from, you're kind of overstepping, you know, and that's, you know, what we would hold North Korea to. And I mean, ISIS was talking about extinction of anyone who wasn't part of the caliphate. And
good example, Kyle.
We wouldn't accept that.
Good
for one
example.
Minute.
One I forgot about. ISIS. Yeah, barbarians. How dare they do all? And you know, they're horrible people. I'm not debating any of that. You know, they go around lobbing people's heads off on video. It's terrible. But then the Saudi government does the exact same thing for the most absurd charges. People are sentenced to death and publicly beheaded. And we're great friends with them. We turn a blind eye to that. The hypocrisy is just it's so incredibly frustrating.
We chalk it up to like a cultural difference. Oh, we don't punish in the same ways.
So, you know, none of this is about who is right and who is wrong. It's about being treated the way you wish to be treated. Whether you're a diplomat, whether you're a football player, whether you're a cop, whether you're a civilian, you know, that's I believe in treating people with respect. That goes for anyone until they do something to indicate that they're not worthy of respect. I think how most people operate. And it's just unfortunate to see all these assumptions being made. And inequalities being put forth as the default status, and it should not be the default status. North Korea should be treated with the same respect as anyone else, for the purposes of having a conversation, for the purposes of figuring out where we're going to go from here. Until that happens, you're just going to see more and more of the same. It's not going to change. It hasn't changed over the past however many decades it's been. So we need to move on from this and deal with a lot of other issues that we have to deal with as well.
Yeah, if you're seeing a lot of the old results, you might question that perhaps you need some new tactics, some new strategies on some of these issues going forward to maybe get some new results instead of the same thing.
Mm-hmm. You can join the conversation, by the way, if you wish. 631-632-WUSB is our phone number, 631-632-9872. Here's a story, though, that just happened in Nashville, where we just were recently. This happened last night.
A couple of weeks ago, we just got back from that area.
Now, right away, this is a story from the Daily News. But right away, this kind of underlines what I'm talking about here. It's a story of a shooting that took place on the street last night in Nashville.
Okay.
The father of a 26-year-old Tennessee woman accused of shooting a homeless man said his daughter only meant to fire off a pair of warning shots when the man threatened her and a friend. Okay, now let's examine the lead sentence of a newspaper story about a homeless man being shot on the streets of Nashville by this woman. And right away, it's evoking sympathy for her. Not the shooting victim, but right away we start off by feeling sorry for this person who shot a guy on the street, shot a homeless man on the street. Let me read it again. The father of a 26-year-old Tennessee woman accused of shooting a homeless man said his daughter only meant to fire off a pair of warning shots when the man threatened her and a friend. So right away, you've got the father leading off the story for some reason. You think he might be a little bit biased?
Yeah.
Quite possibly. A homeless man, right away, first of all, why is that even relevant to being shot? Do they tell you where, you know, your income level? They might as well. The income level of somebody who was a victim of a crime before you learn anything else about them.
Replace it with a rich man or I don't know.
Okay.
an average
man. Millionaire. Okay. Father.
An average man.
How about this? The father of a homeless man accused of shooting a millionaire. doesn't work, does it?
No.
All right. This is terrible, though. I mean, because right away you are biased reading the story. The headline of the story, Tennessee woman charged with shooting homeless man. Again, you know, I guess homeless kind of illustrates the story a little bit because the headline Tennessee woman charged with shooting man, I guess, is kind of boring. But there's other ways you could spice that up a bit. The fact that he's homeless is not relevant to the action of what happened. But let's read on and see how this story, maybe it'll improve. Authorities on Monday charged Katie Lane Quackenbush. Quackenbush. Can you imagine if our president had been named Quackenbush instead of just regular Bush? I think maybe things would have gone differently. Yeah, I'm George W. Quackenbush. And
I, George W.
Follow me into war. That's another example, too. You know, don't you think George W. Bush should be held to account just like anybody else who wound up killing 10,000 of his own citizens through stupidity?
Yeah, or at least,
I think, yeah.
At least the mercenaries that he hired.
Again, you know, well, we won't do it again. Okay, let's focus. Let's focus. Authorities on Monday charged Katie Lane Quackenbush with attempted murder. This is when they charged her. This actually happened on August 26th. Okay. Always read the stories carefully, folks. August 26th shooting of Gerald Melton, according to the Metropolitan Nashville Police. She was jailed around 6 p.m. on a $25,000 bond. $25,000? You can shoot somebody and $25,000, and you can probably get out for a fraction of that in cash. She was jailed 6 p.m. Okay, according to this story, she was jailed around 6 p.m. yesterday, September 11th, which means from August 26th to September 11th, she wasn't even jailed for shooting a guy on the street. Okay, the 54-year-old shooting victim is still hospitalized with critical injuries. Metro Police told the newspaper that Melton was sleeping on the sidewalk near Music Row when he became disturbed by exhaust fumes and loud music coming from a Porsche being driven by Quackenbush.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. He is sleeping on the street and becomes upset at loud music and exhaust fumes from her Porsche, which was, I guess, next to where he was sleeping. Melton reportedly asked her to move the vehicle. Even that sounds very civilized. Asked her to move the vehicle, sparking an argument between the pair. Okay, so let's see how this goes here. Just looking at that sentence in an already biased story here. He asked her to move the vehicle and sparked an argument. If you ask somebody to do something, the only way you can spark an argument is if they refuse to do it. And why would you refuse to move your damn Porsche or at least turn it off or turn the music down if there's a guy sleeping right there? What, he's homeless? He doesn't have a right to not have exhaust fumes belched into his face, not to be disturbed because he's homeless? I mean, think about what kind of a person would have a problem with that. If a homeless person is homeless, they have enough problems. You don't need to add more to it.
No.
But apparently this Quackenbush thought that she could.
No, people are so inconsiderate and careless about their vehicles and emissions, whether that be sonic or toxic or whatever verb. Yeah, it's all something that people in a lot of situations are completely oblivious to. They don't really think about the impact they have on people around them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what seems to
sad.
Be the case.
Yeah,
that's sad. Again, our default setting.
Yeah, not instead of having compassion, maybe giving this person a little space. God help you if you, like, you know, strike up a conversation with them.
Now, the story doesn't read he jumped into her car and tried to steal it or move it himself or attacked her immediately. He asked her to move the vehicle, sparking an argument. Okay, fine. Let's move on. That's when the young mother, again, sympathy. Oh, she's a young mother. She stepped out of the car, gun in hand, and fired two shots at Melton, who was wounded in the exchange. Well, yeah, no kidding. Wow, how did that happen? How did he get wounded? Maybe it was from the exchange.
So yeah, she squared up, like got in position, you know, like got her foot plant, you know.
What I don't get here, looking at this story again, you know, she stepped out of the car. So she was in the car and felt threatened by this homeless guy sleeping on the street. She's inside her damn car.
Still
she's already safe from any kind of danger. She could just drive away.
Right.
But instead, she steps out of the car, gun in hand, young mother, out of the car, gun in hand, and fired at this guy. I mean, come on.
This is why access to these things is ridiculous, because it too often becomes the go-to answer to situations that do not need to be resolved with these kinds of tools.
Well, yeah, there's that whole thing, but there's also just the inequality. If she were a black male or even a black female, or, you know, God forbid, Muslim, and did something like this, first of all, it would be all over the news. I had to hunt to find this story, but the amount of danger that the populace would be feeling from this out of control person would be palpable. I mean, basically, this is something that's just being brushed under the rug. Why? Because, you know, she's a young mother and, you know, obviously white.
Got caught up in the heat of the moment, defending herself.
A homeless man, Kyle, a homeless man.
He could have.
Wow.
He could have had a can of soup that he threw at her and an old shoe. Maybe
it's. I mean, you know, we laugh, but it's a tragic story. This is horrible. This is horrible. This kind of thing happens, and it gets virtually no coverage, and people get away with this, and we think it's okay. And the story continues. Okay, so then what happened was the shooter got. Wait a minute. Who are we quoting here? He told.
She got blood on the Porsche.
Okay, Metro Police told the newspaper, they just say in the middle of the story, he told officers, the guy got shot. Okay, so he was conscious at the time. He told officers that his shooter got back into the vehicle and then left the scene. So not only does she shoot the guy, you know, gets out of her car, shoots the guy for giving her lip, but she gets in the car and leaves after shooting him.
Young mother.
Okay, Kyle. All right, fine. Young mother.
The real victim in all this is the Porsche. It did not bring this on. It didn't deserve this.
Now, her father and an attorney from Texas. Well, he's an attorney. This is very badly written. Jesse Quacken. How would you interpret this, Kyle? Jesse Quackenbush.
Quackenbush.
Okay, stay with me. Jesse Quackenbush, Katie's father and an attorney from Texas. Are those two people, or is that the same person?
Wait a minute. So her dad is a lawyer.
Okay, so her dad. Okay, you interpret
it
that way.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, so he's an attorney from Texas. That's how he got this story.
That kind of makes this. Yeah, he called his old pal from Kappa Alpha Omega.
He said his daughter wasn't even aware she struck Melton following their argument. So basically, what you're saying, Jesse, is that if I go up to somebody and I shoot them and then I walk away, and I tell the cops later, yeah, I didn't think I hit him. That's why I left. So they're gonna be good with that. That's gonna be okay. That's a good excuse in your eyes, that you can just shoot somebody, walk away because you assume you were a bad shot. Wow, that's amazing. Watch whiteness work. Yeah, that is whiteness working on a level I have not seen it work in a long time.
And that's not even what it's saying.
That's not even true. I see it work like that all the time.
It does actually, unfortunately. But that is even saying, I mean, you're not going far enough, really, because that's he's saying that his poor little
princess
poopsie whoopsie whatever.
Let's not mock her anymore. Already being mocked.
Made her her gun go boom boom and all that, but like didn't even recall having used it. Period.
No. She don't put words in Jesse's mouth. She recalls using it. She just didn't think she hit him. That's why she got in the car.
Oh, I didn't think I hit him.
Now, how do you do that exactly? You fire somebody. Do you not check? You just fire and then get in the car and leave? You just fired a gun. Maybe you want to look to see if it hit anything?
Wait a minute. That blows. Oh, man. Pardon the pun. Blows holes in the story of it being warning shots, because how are you not? Of course, if you think you're firing a warning shot, how would you how would you have an opinion about hitting him?
Kyle, where do you fire your warning shots?
I'm not even going to joke about this.
You better not, because it's a serious issue. No, I mean,
in
come
the
on.
Ground.
Everybody carries a gun,
in
right?
The ground.
In America, folks listening overseas, we all carry guns required by law now.
In
so
the ground.
So you fire it into the ground?
My pa taught me that your warning shots go into the ground.
All right. Well, he probably had another agenda then. But where I come from, you fire your warning shots up in the air. I know they come back down, don't they?
You didn't live by an airport, did you?
Yeah, that's another thing. But okay, so a warning shot. No, you don't fire at the person to warn them. That's not a warning shot. That's a shot.
It already sounds like a bad story.
Go ahead. We have to get through this
because we're
running out of time. Okay, so basically, she wasn't aware she struck. She struck the guy. Her father says she didn't try to kill this guy. She had no intention of killing him. She didn't even know that she hit him. He alleged that Melton approached Quackenbush and her friend, yeah, somebody else there too, both of whom were seated inside the vehicle and began hurling sexist insults and threatening them. Oh, okay. This is about sexism. Oh, well, there you go. Now I'm on your side. All right. All the doubt I was expressing before, you throw feminism into it and I'm with you no matter what happens. He said something sexist to her, and she fired a gun at him. More power to her, I say.
You Boy, go, girl.
Yeah, you go. It's absolutely. What are you supposed to do? There's nothing else you can do. I mean, it's not like women have been dealing with this kind of crap for centuries. You have to shoot them. Absolutely.
What did he call them, broads or something?
Who knows? Anyway, when Melton walked away. No, wait. I don't understand.
Oh, they shot him in the back. A warning shot in the back.
No, he walked away. Okay.
This is insane. What state
yeah, the
is
story
this?
Just
Did
gets,
you already tell me what state this is?
It says, Kyle, it's a city we were just in, Nashville.
Oh, right.
Keep
Tennessee.
Up, keep up.
Got it. Okay. No, it's just dragging out. It's unbelievable.
When Melton walked away, Quackenbush escorted her friend from the Porsche, bringing her firearm with her for safety. You know, within the story, it's contradicting itself. Now she's getting out with her friend, bringing her firearm with her for safety, whereas before she stepped out and fired two shots at the guy. So maybe this is the extended version of that. Melton again started to approach them. So Quackenbush warned him she had a weapon, which is very easy to say you did, since nobody will be able to prove you did or didn't. She did say she closed her eyes when she shot both times, but they were warnings, and she thought she pointed away from him. Oh, come on. You know, I don't know much about guns, but I do know you probably know which way you're pointing it.
But if you're facing someone, if someone's threatening you and you have a gun, you're going to be facing them at some point. You either know that you put your warning shots in the ground or in the air or into the hurricane or whatever's safe, or you don't. Or you basically raise the gun like you're trained or practice. There's one or two motions you're going to be doing with that gun your entire ownership life cycle. And, you better know what position is what.
Okay.
I just feel like people practice to shoot and they're not practicing for other situations.
Yeah. No, it's true.
That's what cops get into all this trouble with owning these things. And people do, too. They have
cops are people, Kyle. They're people.
Fine. They have their training response, their nervous response. They black out, they blank, they whatever you want to call it, but it happens, and it's a real problem when that's the go-to solution.
Let me finish the story. Both Quackenbush and her friend then left for dinner following the altercation. The story just keeps getting worse and worse.
Because they worked up an appetite.
I just shot a guy. That makes me hungry. Let's go out to Cheesecake Factory or whatever. And they went for dinner following the altercation. But when they returned to the Porsche, wait, they left the Porsche parked there?
Oh, my God.
So hold on a second. Hold this guy.
Poor car.
You just fired a gun at a guy who you're saying you were in fear for your safety from this guy. And you're going to park your Porsche next to that guy. What in God's name is wrong with you? They got several screws that were never installed with these people.
And he's writhing on the ground.
When they returned to the Porsche, it had turned into a crime scene. It was a crime scene pretty much when they pulled up, I think. Oh, boy. So Quackenbush, in case you want to see the entertainment, she's slated to appear in court October 6th. She eventually turned herself in, according to the story here. But, my God, if anything points out the inequity in our society, it's that. But just realize that the inequity, it spans the globe, literally. And we have to start looking at how we treat other people, how we are treated by other people, and how we paint this picture that is insanely skewed, and we expect the rest of the world to go along with it. It's not going to keep happening forever. And the sooner we get used to that fact, the easier the transition will be to a world of equality and fairness.
Yeah, you have to recognize that there is inequity. There is other individuals suffering, right, alongside your gifts and all the wonderful things, the virtues you're blessed with. There's real pain. You have to respect that and empathize, at least empathize with other people and the struggle, the things they're going through. And respond in some human way.
Well, I'm sorry we didn't get to any phone calls, but you can write to us, otw@2600.com. If anything we said touches a nerve, good. That's a sign of progress. Let us know what you think, and we'll be back again next week with more outrageousness. Good night.
Bye.
When I'm all alone on my own by my lonesome and there ain't a single nother soul around, I wanna dig into my guitar, bend a blues riff that hangs over everything.
When I'm by myself and it's daytime, cause down under wherever it is I live when it's evening, you know I speed read the morning news and come up with my own little song. Step outside to a beautiful morning where the trees are all wagging, my hair flag waving, the scenery raging, my love flock cascading and the smog hangs over everything.
When I'm outside in a real good mood, you could almost forget about all the other things, like a big old ominous cloud in my periphery. I inhabit a high-pitched ring over things, so these days I plug them up.
When I'm struggling with my songs, I do the same thing too, and I crunch them up in headphones, cause why wouldn't you? You could say I hear you on several levels at high decibels over everything. We'll be right back.
guitar.